My name is Frankie Paletta of Outdoor Living Life, and I am a hardscaper.
Welcome to the I Am a Hardscaper series on the How to Hardscape podcast, where we sit down and interview a hardscape business owner and do a deep dive on how they became a hardscaper and how they operate their business. I want to say a big thank you to today's sponsors, IQ Power Tools. They manufacture a comprehensive range of innovative power tools with integrated dust collection systems. Check them out at IQPowerTools.com, as well as Alliance Gator for sponsoring today's episode. Their innovation has brought products like Gator Base, G2 Polymeric Sand, Extreme Edge, Nitro Joint Sand, and a diverse range of geotextiles to the hardscape market. Check them out at AllianceGator.com, and let's get into today's episode with Frankie of Outdoor Living Life. All right, Frankie, let's get started to learn a little bit more about yourself, how you got started in the industry. Give our audience a little bit of a background about yourself and what led to kind of where you are today, and we'll take it from there.
So yeah, I guess in a nutshell, I think I'm like most guys, girls out there that kind of get into this industry. It's kind of by chance. I had some relatives of mine, some close cousins, and they had a lawn mowing business, putting themselves through college. And in high school, pretty young, asked me to come help them. We eventually got into some landscaping. And I suppose a few years after that, We did our first patio. I can remember a couple of them. They're all on the same street. And we kind of realized how much we liked it. And we started getting more and more work on that side of things. So I suppose that's how I got into the industry itself. I just kind of stuck with it. I really enjoyed it. Eventually, I started leading a crew. I was doing a lot of the sales, a lot of the designing, and leading a crew. It was kind of getting to be a larger company at that point. And I would say around 2008, when we had a lot of issues with the business, I suppose, you know, the whole world had a lot of issues at that point. And I broke away, and then I started my own business. There's been some kind of some steps here and there and some moving and jogging around, but that's pretty much where everything kind of began.
Nice. So when you kind of got started on your own there, you decided to go out on your own. Did you already have kind of jobs lined up, or what was that turning point kind of like for you? Was it starting basically from fresh, right from new, trying to market yourself to get new clients and to start to get new projects under your belt?
Yeah, you know, I suppose it was definitely a scary time. I was young. I had a new family. Unfortunately, we had a son that passed away. And then, of course, you know, for our family, we were, I guess, very much down. My wife at the time had been on bed rest because we were pregnant again. And she had unfortunately lost her position at her work. We had a house foreclosed. So we were kind of at like, what do we do now? And this was just, for me, it was the easiest thing. It was just natural. The position I had held, I was almost doing, you know, the person would call in from that point, collecting the first check, designing all the way to the end, final inspections, collecting the last check. I was pretty much running a business at that point, at least with that crew. I remember I was Frankie Paletta Hardscaping. I had a very small loan from my mother, and I was able to buy a laser level, buy a saw, and some business cards, and get into a local home and garden show, which at that time you could book your whole year if you really did it right. And I think for myself, it was a time where I was able to take advantage of the economic crisis, I suppose, that the U.S. was in. And a lot of companies in the area were kind of closing their doors, where I didn't have the overhead. I didn't have the employees. So I was able to find the customers that were out there that were looking for somebody. And I kind of filled in that gap for them. And then I suppose I had done maybe anywhere from 6 to 7 patios that year. And the next year was probably twice as much, not three or four times as much products, or I should say, as far as how much we were doing in income. And then it's interesting because from there, I did become the company I worked for. I was their largest competitor, and no hard feelings. We just decided that we would merge. We'd see how that would take us. And from there, things went okay for that year. Actually, I pulled away from that company. My cousin, he had actually pulled away too, because he was going on different venture. And so that company no longer exists. But about a year later, I started all up again, fresh, and now here we are.
Gotcha. And I'm sorry to hear about your child's passing. I know that's come up in your stories before. You've got a nice tattoo of his feet, I believe, on your arm there in memory of that. I can't imagine the time that you went through there and how difficult that must have been.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate that. That was somewhere around 2009. So it's been quite a long time. And actually I'm doing this interview so your viewers can get a picture. I'm actually at a relative's home. I'm in the Jeep, I'm in between things, and I'm looking at my two kids out there having some fun. And you know, that as much as there's hardships and there's some challenges that we come across, like I can't imagine things being any better than they are right now.
Incredible way perspective that you bring to this, Frankie, and I appreciate that. And having said, you know, what you've talked about so far with your journey, I've heard time and time again, companies started during this 2008-2009 era are almost like, setting themselves up for some sort of success, even though it may not seem like, you know, the perfect time to start a business. But like you said, when you're starting, you've got low overhead, which allows you to take on jobs that these bigger companies can't. And these bigger companies are laying people off, selling equipment, whatever it might be. It's almost like counterintuitive in terms of this is like a good time to start a business during this downturn. And did you find that, you know, you fit nicely into the market with being that new company and starting your business when you did?
I think so. I think as much as it was a challenge then, it's still a challenge. And it kind of always can be with employees. Finding those customers has not really been difficult. And I suppose the customers finding us as well, but more or less, you know, figuring out what our capabilities are that year. I had a recent conversation with a competitor in town. We're friends, and you know, he made the comment: every winter comes by, and you start talking about what are we doing next year? How are we going about things? How many employees are we going to have? You know, what services are we going to offer? And I think that's important: is to stay flexible. We talk about overhead as well. Being flexible, not getting in too deep on things, so that if you need to shift, it's a lot, you know, it's a little bit easier. This year we've downsized quite a bit. We kind of had about two crews running last year. Right now it's myself and what feels at times a couple guys. So we just made some moves that made it easier, and we're just plugging away at this point.
Now that's interesting that you brought that up. I've kind of followed the same suit as that. Downsizing, what was the decision behind that, if I could kind of pry into that a little bit? Is it because maybe you're forecasting something happening in the near future that might reduce the amount of sales coming in? Is it a lifestyle, more of a lifestyle choice for you, combination of the two, or completely different reason why?
Well, that's a good question. I would like to say that it was, you know, what we initially wanted to do. And yet you bring up the lifestyle. I like that you brought that up, because for me, I'm taking this as an opportunity to make this work better for the lifestyle that I want. I think a lot of us, especially around this time, we feel run down. It feels like everything is pulling us into a direction that we have to go. You want to finish the jobs for the year. You're struggling to find your materials. Guys are kind of dropping off here and there because they're kind of getting burned out as well. And, you know, that's not always a fun place to be. And you're kind of like, how do I make this work better for me next year? And I don't like to be in that position. Really, I say that, you know, next year, I'd rather be in a position where like, no, I'm making these changes now. And I started to get into that mindset last year. What do I need to do now? I'm not going to talk about like next year. I'm talking about now. And yeah, I would say, you know, we had lost a couple guys over the winter, which kind of normally happens, and we get in new guys, and getting the new guys this spring just didn't really happen. We hired on some temp agencies. I think we looked, and I've never had to reach out to find guys in the past. We normally could find guys, pretty easily. Maybe it's somebody knows, or, you know, whatever that might be, whatever the case. But in this situation, I mean, I've never spent money. And I think this year I spent thousands of dollars and had zero luck with finding guys. I get more through social media, actually putting some ads there, whether they're free or even paid. I think that's where we found our most success, or maybe somebody knew someone. So I would say that forced me to just put a pause on selling. So we're actually still going through projects that were sold over the colder months. Maybe it was like last fall, into the winter, and then the early spring. So we've done some selling. I would say a lot of the things that I've catered to would be the shade structures. So for example, we do a lot of pergolas and pavilions. There's an Amish company, gazebo.com, Country Lane is the name of them. And they do a great job. And we put our order in, it gets shipped. We can put it up in a day. It's not something I have to spend a lot of time. So we talk about like not having employees or whatever it might do. We talk about lifestyle, but there's also these opportunities to look at things like this, for example, the shade structures. I can actually have another crew outside of my company install these, and it can still provide the income that's needed to support the company, and of course the employees and myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And do you find that there's been a shift over the years since you've been in the industry, that it has been harder and harder to find labor? Or is it just kind of this past year or two being what we've kind of been going through?
That's interesting. I've always, we're an authorized contractor for Unilock. And I feel as if at times there's been this, they know what's going on. They've got, their analysts and, they get an idea. They want to sell as much product as they can. And they see that we've been over the years, it's always been a challenge with finding labor, keeping labor. And then hardscaping is a very challenging job. It's not often you have a seasoned guy that's a little bit older that you would love to work for you, but the work is really challenging. Maybe that guy eventually is a supervisor, or he goes out and he starts his own business. So having said that, yeah, I think that like these manufacturers, if you look at what they've been doing lately, it's been creating larger format pavers and lifting machines. So Unilock has the Unilift, for example. MQIP has a lot of different variety of lifting where, they got, I think they're the ones that got the Moose, and they've got the backpack lifters, whatever that looks like. But yeah, they're great. I mean, we use the Unilift a lot where we can have one or two guys lay a patio in less than a day or a day. And, they can go slow at it for all I care. Doesn't matter. They come in the next day, we're fresh. We're building other items during and even after the patio is being installed. So yeah, looking at that environment, I think everybody kind of gets the idea that, these are some of the challenges that we have, with our, just the industry in itself, and, having those lifting machines and other items like that just make things a world of difference.
When you decided to kind of scale back for the time being, Did you use any money to invest into new equipment or just equipment in general to kind of, you know, take place of that efficiency lost in labor, you know, put that towards equipment and kind of mechanized? Did you, invest in that a little bit?
No. And I only say that because year before I believe a lot in relationships, whether it's relationships with your competitors, or relationships with your suppliers and your manufacturer. And we've already had agreements with, so for example, our supplier rents us the Unilift, and it works out. It's very financially, it's not as bad as it sounds with this agreement that we have. And then also with some competitors in town, we've utilized them a couple different times this year, whereas they might be able to help us with something a little more in depth, or maybe I need to go a little faster or whatever that might be. I could say the one thing that's been costly, I love using an open grade base. I can say I equally like to use a concrete base. You kind of get away from, the benefit of having a segmental installation when you're doing that. But I can also say, there's like the Easy Base, or I think, Alliance calls it their Gator Base. These items are out there, can make things go so much faster for you. But sometimes you've got a little bit of a cost that you've got to kind of weigh and do the math, see what works best for you.
Yeah, definitely. And getting into discussing about how you're acquiring clients right now and talking about, putting your sales a little bit on pause right now so that you can focus on the installation side. Where where were your clients coming from? Where were you acquiring them prior to kind of putting that sales on pause? And are you still getting lots of leads the same way where you're having to say, hey, we're kind of booking into next year already? If you want to talk about it, we can talk. How are you handling all this right now?
I'll make a comment, and I don't know how some people might take it, but there are times when I see a lead come through and I'm like, I almost put my head down, think to myself, I just don't want another lead right now. Like, when am I going to get to this person? Right. Throughout this year, I've tried to put in place some structure to this. I don't know how to say it, but basically, if somebody calls in or emails, you eventually get to the point, and I don't even talk to them yet, but my phone will give me a notification that I have a phone call set up to talk to somebody. And there's very few time slots. And I think this works well, as long as there are time slots that I know that I can be available. Maybe it's around lunchtime or the evening. And that's something that I've learned to do. That's a first for me this year, is a phone call. I would say, in the springtime, we're getting 5 leads a day. I'm not getting to 5 customers in a week. For me, myself, I want to be able to show somebody a design, right? Like, we want to be able to show that design, give our best foot forward, the presentation. I can sell anybody of a patio, how great it looks, how well it's going to support the vision that they have. Maybe it's bringing their family together. Maybe it's having some get-togethers with friends and, whatever that might be. Maybe it's just adding value to their home. But I would say that, over time, we've had to make those adjustments, especially this year, as to I really need to say no to as many people as possible to get to the customers that I know are like, I want to go right now. I know that you're going to give me a fair price, and I know the quality of the work that you do. Let's just, they just want an idea. How much are we talking about? Are we, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $80,000? Just, let's get something going. So I'll have a conversation, and, we're not shy about talking about numbers. Look, you are definitely over $30,000 with some options or whatever you might pick. You could be up to 50. And then the next step is, yes, we need to do a design. I need to come out. The design fee is X amount. And this is like a full outdoor situation. Sometimes it's just a pergola where you can almost make, I'm at my computer or my phone, I'm shooting them texts. here are these pictures, here's this, and we can almost make the sale. And I have a couple times this year, right over the phone, in 15 to 25 minutes. And even smaller patios, it's been fairly easy. And then we come out, we just take some final measurements and put it into a 3D design so they can see it. And then you can take off from there.
I just want to take a moment from today's episode to thank IQ Power Tools for being a sponsor of today's episode. This episode is brought to you by IQ Power Tools, the firm that builds smart, tough, award-winning, clean-cut concrete and masonry power tools that eliminate dust. Eliminating dust from your job site is smart, it saves time, it saves money, and it saves lives. Keep your job sites safe and healthy for you and your crew, as well as the neighbors and the homeowner around you, and look professional while you're on the job site with these IQ Power Tools dust eliminating systems. Visit them at iqpowertools.com and learn how to implement healthier and more efficient work practices for your next project. And give them a thanks on their social channels at IQ Power Tools for sponsoring the How to Hardscape podcast. I also want to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Alliance Gator, for bringing today's episode. They are the makers behind Gator Base, a synthetic base option that reduces excavation for patios and walkways. This product is time proven, with millions of square feet installed, holding up to freeze-thaw cycles for years without failure. The product has helped my business personally take advantage of the labor savings. As we all know, good labor is more difficult to find than ever, and demand for our outdoor projects has never been higher. We use this product to keep up with that demand while providing our clients quality installs. The efficiency of this product helps us squeeze in more projects into our schedule, and we use Gator Base as often as we can and whenever applicable. You can find out more about this product at alliancegator.com, found in the show notes of this episode, and you can connect with your local rep for installation assistance. Now back to our episode. Mm-hmm.
And I've seen you quite a bit on your stories sealing patios. Can you talk a little bit about your maintenance package, how it's maybe evolved over the years, and give us a little bit of insight on that? Because I've thought about this for, I guess, a couple of seasons now, trying to wrap my head around what a maintenance package would look like for a client, and trying to think about different ways of doing this. And then, like, we've had guys that on this podcast that offer a wide variety of warranties, everything from, you know, a couple years, 2 years, 3 years, all the way to lifetime. And trying to kind of think about how I can offer my clients the most amount of value, and including some sort of maintenance package on an ongoing basis is something that I do want to get into at some point. I just don't know when, and I don't quite know how. Can you give us a little bit of insight about how you kind of work things, how it's evolved over the years?
Yeah, definitely. So I think I should preface the conversation with, it's always, you know, finding out what works. We're still finding out what works best. You know, customers might have complaints, or they might say, hey, they might give you some feedback, you know, this could be better, or I don't really need this. And that's also a challenge, because you need to direct them into what is best for their patio and your what you could do as a company. So with that being said, and also with the cost, you know, that's something you've really got to look at the numbers and play them into what works for you. You know, we get a lot of guys that message us, how much do you charge a square foot? Gosh, you know, that's tough, because it depends if we're talking about, you know, how are we cleaning the patio? Are we cleaning with the intent that we're going to use a power washer? And we know a lot of the sand is going to come out. We're talking about a customer that has a lot of moss consistently in the joints of the poly sand. Are we just looking at using maybe a heated power washer, no chemicals? And, you know, we know we're going to have a little bit of touch-ups with poly sand. So those are the things that you kind of got to take a look at. We do have a square foot price. I do tell my customers that if you do it every year, there's a discount that's applied. And I can say, you know, this is the most important thing that I will say. I only started doing this because I was exhausted from having those warranty conversations in the spring. Going out, spending your first 2 weeks, maybe, or maybe you have a day that you're like, all right, we're going to go out. And, you know, and for example, all we do is patios, paper patios. So I have a lot of past clients Not everybody does this program every year. Sometimes they might skip some years. I don't know. It's always a conversation, right? But with that being said, I can go in. I can, you know, I don't even know the last time really we've talked too much to a customer about our warranty. The conversation is always, hey, we come out, we do free repairs. If you have anything that needs repaired, as long as you do this every year and, you know, give you a discount, or maybe there's not a discount, it just depends, you know, square footage plate, you know, has a part. But this is what we're going to do. And you're going to have a brand new looking patio every single year. And I can say, like, the people that do this every year, they have the most value. I've got patios, and trust me, I was super nervous to do this. I started thinking to myself, what if I have patios that are 5, 6, 7 years old, even 3 years old, 4 years old? What am I getting myself into? And I was really surprised that when we're putting our hands on a patio, say in the spring or whatever time of year you want to do, that's another conversation, is when do you do them? Spring is wet. It's not the easiest. You can go out and power wash, but talk about maybe poly sand or sealer, there's very few days to work with. But with trying to remember what I was getting at, but yeah, I would say to go in and power wash and seal, we're not finding that there's the repairs. You know, once a year, I might have one or two repairs that we've got to do. And it's sometimes a little low spot, depending what edge restraint we're using, that might be a conversation. Typically it's not something that we would say was part of the free repairs. Nowadays we're using a concrete edging of some sort, whether it's, you know, the perma edge, or, you know, or sometimes there's other ways that you can come about, or, you know, work that into doing it. But I guess that's the main point, is I was very surprised at how little repair work that we actually had to do. So it very much became, okay, how are we turning this into a business as well? It definitely provides the opportunity to advertise. You know, a lot of people in our area see us consistently sanding and sealing. And so they're like, hey, I see you all the time doing this. And yeah, practice makes things easier and better the more you do it. And we've learned a lot on what not to do, what not to maybe offer that you can do. We've kind of pulled away from some of the, you know, if you've got stains or, you know, that, like, we'll do our best to get it up. Sometimes we just don't really guarantee it. I think it's kind of like you got your carpet cleaned in your house. Like, yeah, we can work at it a little bit, see what we can do. But the customers are always happy with it. You know, they've got a patio, it looks clean, it's nice for the year. We give them tips and tricks on how they can make it look, you know, like brand new throughout the whole season, which helps us the next time we have to clean it as well when they're taking care of it. So
definitely. Do you charge them on a monthly basis, or is this like at the beginning of the season, once we get going, you pay this for the year and it's like a full annual price? How does that work?
You know, I've thought about that, what it would look like to do a monthly charge. I think it might be easier for some, pill to swallow, I suppose. Depends how much it is. If somebody's paying $300, like, that's not, you know, nothing to bat an eye at. But if somebody's paying closer to $1,000, yeah, I think that's something where they could find value to say, look, we're just going to charge your card. Maybe it's just a monthly thing. I think it's easier to say, hey, you know, it's just every month is $50, whatever that looks like, or 40 or something. I think that's easier. I've thought about that. I haven't talked to customers to think how they feel about it. But generally speaking, I would say the average is anywhere from $400 to $700 is what we're charging to go in and clean. We have those conversations of the polymeric sand. Are we just doing a fresh, nice coat over the whole thing? You know, there's limitations to the poly sand, what you're using. You know, we're doing it every year, so it's not like you need it to be the best. You know, that's a hard conversation, right? Like, every poly sand manufacturer has, you know, here's the best way. And they might tell you, you know, if you're going to do this, you need to remove all of the polymeric sand. I could say there are times when we have a customer that's maybe, well, I can remember one right now. I think he was about 7 or 8 years old. We said to ourselves, like, hey, how about we just remove all of the sand? It's going to be a little bit more costly. We'll just charge you. Maybe it's the material to do that. We're already there power washing it. And, you know, he said, yeah, that sounds great. Let's just do that. Cool. At that rate, yeah, we're in power washing with the intent to remove all of the polymeric sand.
Yeah, I think that's what kind of holds me up on kind of getting into this, is that some of these things can become, if it's not drawn out properly, you know, you can differ of an opinion with your client on, you know what, they want the entire polymeric sand reinstalled. You think like another year, because there's only maybe a couple spots that can be scraped out and reinstalled. So I definitely think like you'd have to have it really clear to the client how you operate. And I feel like this would kind of take years of experience to be able to confidently create this maintenance package going forward. But I see it like as a huge value add to the client, as well as, you know, if you have a warranty issue, if a stone breaks, you're going out there anyways. You might as well combine that with some sort of maintenance package that, you know what, you have to replace a stone. You're there. Let's seal this thing. Make it look nice for the client. Something like that is where I see this being a huge value add to clients.
Yeah. And I would say if I were to give the best advice possibly is keep it simple. You know, there's no need to get extremely technical. I believe, yes, having it very well drawn out so your communication is clear and precise to the customer as to their expectations. But keeping it simple, we're coming in, we're going to clean it. We're going to use a power washer, but we're going to use it in a way that we don't remove the poly sand or break it down. And then we are going to, you know, usually it takes a bag or so, or half a bag, to do a nice fresh coat of poly sand over the top of it. That's just going to fill in maybe miscellaneous cracks, or maybe there's a gap. Maybe there was some ants or something that had worked their way, because, you know, a polymeric sand company is not going to guarantee all of those things 100%. So it's just, I would say, just, I'm going in to clean. This is what you can expect, and just keeping it very simple. And then just say, look, if there's more that you would like to have done, then at that time we have that conversation. Here's kind of our general rates maybe you want to put in there. And then if you're going to do, you know, I know that there's a company, I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's almost all they do is the maintenance. And I know they use it as a way to upsell, to do repairs and so forth. I'm kind of the opposite. Look, if you have us do this, we'll take care of these repairs. And these are the repairs that we take care of. Low spots, just general, I guess, low spots. I don't know. I mean, you know, the polymeric sand seems to be the largest issue at times. And then, you know, just keeping it clean. And then the sealing. So we seal every patio that we install, nearly, I would say, 9 out of 10 patios. It just depends. We're kind of getting to a point where we're going to offer it as an add-on with our projects, because it's just built into the cost. And the only reason we thought about that is back to our old conversation of what are we doing this year? How are we going about our business? Because the ceiling takes me out of the picture. I'm the one that's doing that. I trust myself the most. It doesn't take a whole lot of time, but it takes me out of the picture, you know, of me spending time on the job site. So also with our industry, we look at raising our prices. You know, it might be an opportunity to have that as an add-on where we can improve our profit a little bit here or there. And it all adds up.
Definitely. Yeah, it's a really interesting conversation to be had. And I appreciate you talking about this, which brings me to, I guess, one other thing that I'd have, and this sets me up for my next question after this, is that if I signed up a client and I didn't, you know, I had good feelings about them moving into the project, but then during the project, the relationship kind of breaks apart and it's kind of want to get out of that job as soon as possible. If I've signed them up on that maintenance contract and I'm going to be seeing them every year, it kind of deters me away from doing that. Has there ever been a time that this has happened to you? Have you had to break things off with a maintenance contract before? Anything that you'd get into that you'd want to talk about with this?
Yeah, I can say one recent item, maybe it was last month or the month before, but this customer had a very challenging time. I think they're a couple of years old on their patio, and contacting the manufacturer, this is a grill. This was all over this grill situation, and you know, working with my distributor, you know, eventually just became, you know, the manufacturer's supposed to produce some parts, ship them in, and then only a couple of them got shipped. And there's all these other conversations about, well, you know, tell us about how the grill was installed and all these things, which, you know, at the end, the customer and I agreed that this was just a faulty product. We're just waiting on parts, and it just didn't happen. You know, COVID can only be an excuse for so long at times, right? Like that's a whole separate conversation. But eventually, you know, and I wouldn't say it was, so the maintenance had no part of this, but I came together with our distributor and we just agreed we'd figure out on getting this customer a brand new grill. So we brought in a brand new grill. And at the end of it, I said, you know, sir, I think it's probably best if we just part ways. And he said, you know, I think that might be best as well. So that's how that ended, right? But yeah, that's a conversation too. You know, how does this work? You know, put the ball in your court. I would say if this was a contract that you had, it might give you the, you know, any given time, you can pull away. That's up to you to decide. That's in your contract and they're agreeing to it. Now, of course, you know, man, those are really tough conversations. Eventually you're going to get to a point if a customer wants to, you know, take a legal action against you, that is going to happen regardless. If you're coming from their position. So, I really wouldn't be too shy to kind of, you know, I mean, we all have our contracts and they all kind of help to protect us. They help to protect the customer as well. But, you know, there's always going to be those situations where, you know, you just can't make everybody happy, as they say, I suppose, right?
For sure. And then that brings me to this next question. And maybe that is that story that you just gave there is the answer to this question. But Frankie, throughout many years in the industry, do you have a horror story that you'd want to share with our audience? And it's not to put you in the hot seat or anything, but to kind of shine light on the contractor world, things that we get into, and to help somebody coming up or somebody already in the industry, to let them know, you know, what can happen and to kind of put safeguards in place or at least prepare them for what could happen. Do you have a horror story that you'd want to share with us?
Yeah, sure. And I'm not sure which one yet. Right. So, you know, to go back a little bit, you know, to my defense, and I'm like a lot of other guys out there, you know, we started, you're just learning as you go, right? It's not like you're going to school for this. And I remember growing up working for the cousins of mine. I liked to say once I started that I learned what not to do by working for them. And I would say, you know, it was more the other guy that, you know, it was brothers. And, you know, so there was some mistakes, you know, to their defense. Yeah, we're all making mistakes. We're all just trying to figure this out. So with that being said, yeah, I mean, I equally have some horror stories. You know, we have one that's been, it's kind of been a challenge since 2000. I mean, I would say 13. And, you know, you've got manufacturers that come out, you've got, you know, lawyers that, you know, end up getting involved. And, you know, I remember a consultant, I did a job for a consultant, really large project. He just happened to be a consultant. It wasn't why we did the job. But he said, you know, managing your customers' expectations is going to be the biggest thing that you can think to do, like that will have the largest impact. And I don't think I quite got it at that time. I think I was in my 20s, maybe my late 20s at that point. But I mean, you can't say it any better. So managing those expectations, and I'm looking at this scenario I have where we have this very large issue at hand, whereas, you know, potentially their expectations were a little bit different. They kind of thought Uniloc's lifetime warranty was that their patio was going to look exactly how it does right now forever as soon as we were done installing it. And now it's kind of absurd. You know, there's a lot of, you know, challenging legal language that goes into, you know, a lot of these manufacturers are very good at, you know, putting disclaimers everywhere. I mean, right now you get a Unilock pallet and it's got Beacon Hill. It's the larger size. Hey, this is the larger size. Or, hey, it's coming from this region because we're trying to do what we can to make things work for everyone. But yeah, I would say this scenario, it was those expectations. And you're thinking to yourself, wow, they really thought that that was going to be the case. Yeah. Like, you know, you have those customers. And I think everybody out there right now is thinking to themselves, two or three different customers are like, I couldn't believe that they thought this. You know, like you're kind of baffled at times and you just kind of, you shrug your shoulders and you say, all right, what's the best route for us? What can we do? You know, I want you to be happy with your patio. You know, I mean, I for myself, I love every patio that we do. I tell my customers, look, like, this is my patio. This is not your patio. You know, and I'm joking at the time, right? But that's a little bit how I feel. And, you know, you don't want to be too emotionally attached to things. I mean, that's probably maybe a downside. But I like to think that every time we're going to clean a patio, like, I'm taking care of this patio. This is one of my patios. People come to this patio 10 years later. They say, yeah, that's one of Frankie's patios. Like, we can expect this to look this good, this long afterwards. And real quick, we do say that it's transferable. So as you're selling your property, hey, we've got a guy that comes in here and cleans it every year. This 10-year-old patio looks brand new. Have him come in and keep cleaning it for you. He does a great job. And yeah, now their patio looks great. I mean, right now my family is looking for a home. We're hopefully putting an offer on a home today. And, you know, I know a lot of customers, they don't want to sell a patio that looks like garbage. Oh, great. We've got to replace that. You know, outdoor living is our industry is thriving. You know, people used to go into a kitchen. What's the kitchen look like? Now you go into the kitchen and you look out the back door and you're thinking, what's the backyard look like? You know, we're going to spend a lot of time with our family. There's no patio. Okay. Well, that's going to be something that we have to take care of, or it's a patio in disrepair. Yeah. We're going to have to do something about that.
Definitely. Managing client expectations is, I wish I knew 100% how to do that still to this day, because that is something so important, something that I'm constantly learning about, because we don't know what our client doesn't know. And that if we only could put our head into their heads and understand exactly what they're thinking, that would just make things so much easier. Frankie, I don't want to take too much of your time today. I want to get you back to your family. So I got two last questions here. Feel free to take as little or as long as you want with these. First one being, do you have anybody that influences you online, that you look to online for information, anybody that you'd want to give a shout out to for any reason, whether it's online, offline, anybody that you want to give a shout out here to?
Yeah, you know, I can say, and I want to make a statement first. You know, a lot in our industry comes it's repetitive, and you get bogged down with the hustle of all of it, or you can, you know, if you choose to allow that to happen to you. And I can appreciate our industry's presence on Instagram, for example, because I've found over the past couple of years this sense of being rejuvenated to put a little bit more into my designs. And I'm trying to think of a couple guys out there, and I might even cheat a little bit by looking up on my Instagram at the moment. You know, so for example, Richard Carroll, RC Outdoor, hey man, like, he's putting together, he's not doing a ton of work out there. He's doing quite a bit. And I really enjoy looking at, you know, what he's doing. I don't always like to look at the really big projects, although, who is it? I think it's Preston, who puts together some really good jobs. I know Premier, I think they're out east somewhere. Maybe it's New Jersey-ish or something of that nature. Hey, congratulations on your baby. I know he's putting together a lot of unique, he likes to bring in the decks. So he's got a combination of both. And he's kind of really going out there with the outdoor. You know, I love to see the different rooms. I often when I'm designing, I'm talking about different textures and colors and patterns, creating those different rooms and environments, just like you would in your house. You've got tile, carpet, floors. It's exactly what my sales presentation looks like, right? I'm trying to think of some other guys out there offhand. J Squared, Kevin Carr, Kevin, oh gosh, now I can't, I'm going to murder his last name. I'm not sure, but Pride Hardscaping. So now I'm just going through the ones that I like to look at the most, right? And I think that those guys, I think they're kind of Morales. He's, if I'm saying that correctly, I think he's out west a lot. I think I asked him and I was like, oh wow, you're that far out west. I think he's like a good 8 hours west of where I'm at in northwestern Ohio. You know, so I would say that those are kind of the guys that I look to, you know, as I'm scrolling through my Instagram feed and I'm looking for inspiration, like those are the ones that I see the most. And I'm like, man, like that's good job for sure. Yeah. So I would say it would be those guys the most.
Gotcha. And as we wrap things up here, one last question for you, but it's a big one. Frankie, over your time in many years in this industry, what is that one thing you know now that you wish you knew from the very beginning? Whether it's business related, personal related, whatever it is, but what is that one thing you know now that you wish you knew from the very start?
Wow. You know, we talked a lot about the expectations, right? I think that's a really big one. Is pulling it together. I would say another thing that comes to my mind, I don't know if there's this one thing, right? But knowing your value, knowing the worth that you have. I think that speaks volumes as well. Reaching out for support, you know, you're the manufacturer reps, you know, Unilock has their boots on the ground approach. Great job. I talk to my rep daily at times. I talk to my supplier, my main supplier, daily for sure, throughout the day. So, you know, creating those relationships, being, you know, friends with your competitors. I will help my competitors make more money, which also can at times benefit me. But we talk a lot about, hey, what's working for you guys? And we, you know, if do you need something? I let a competitor in town borrow some of our tools and equipment at times. There's a lot of work that's out there. And I would rather be friends and help each other be successful rather than, you know, have an enemy and, you know, just create that negativity in my life. So I would say, you know, those are some of those things that just really stick out to me and they really make a difference in your business. And you know, they kind of have that ripple effect. They come into your life as well.
Excellent, excellent advice throughout this interview. Thank you so much for your time, Frankie. I really appreciate your time. Where can our audience learn more about you, what you've got going on over there?
Yeah. So, I mean, Instagram all day long, it's outdoorliving.life. We've got our website. I believe that's also outdoorliving.life. I would say those are the best places. You can check us out. I'm trying to post things daily. Sometimes I'll have how-tos or some sort of tip and trick if you're interested in that.
And for what it's worth, we started our Instagram page, and our Instagram page is a community page. So we repost and tag, it's the first thing that it's in our description when we tag a contractor and tag the picture that it's their work. And your photos, the 2 years on Instagram, your photos, the first year was our number one liked photo. Second year, you were in the top 9. So consistently, your designs, your construction, your work is showing up in the top 9 of our most liked photos for each year that we've been in on Instagram at How to Hardscape there. So Frankie, I can't say enough thanks for the work that you do in the industry, the quality of work, your designs, and everything that you put out there into the industry.
Yeah, man, I really appreciate that. You know, the positive feedback definitely, it definitely says a lot, you know, for sure. So thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast episode. Go check out more from Frankie over at his Instagram page that he dropped there. Lots of great information in this interview. Thank you so much, Frankie, for joining us on today's episode. And be sure to check out also IQ Power Tools on Instagram while you're there. Check out their integrated dust collection system power tools that they have for this industry, as well as Alliance Gator. Thank you so much for sponsoring today's episode and bringing this content to our industry, both IQ Power Tools and Alliance Gator. And we look forward to meeting with you next week on the How to Hardscape podcast.